If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Hi folks, how you doing? Welcome along to another episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Now you might think, oh wait a minute, that sounds weird. There's a weird buzzing sound in the background, it's quite echoey. That's because I'm coming to you from a rather large dressing room backstage at the Usher Hall in Edinburgh. It's Monday evening and I am in an interval actually of a conversation with McLaren CEO Zak Brown, who just yesterday saw one of his drivers, Lando Norris, win the Drivers' Championship at the final Grand Prix of the season. And less than 24 hours later, I am chatting to him on stage at the Usher Hall. It's mental. He's lovely. I'm having a great time. And so I'm bringing you another episode of Soundtracking in between that chat. I know! Life's mental. Our latest episode of Soundtracking involves a wonderful conversation between Kate Winslet, her son, Joe Anders, composer Ben Harlan, and music supervisor James Taylor, who join me to discuss Kate's directorial debut, Goodbye June, which Joe wrote. Now, the film tells the story of a family who gather around their dying mother at Christmas, played by the wonderful Helen Mirren. And it's a family who are confronting grief, reconciliation, and love. The ensemble cast is magnificent. Kate, obviously, I mentioned Helen Mirren, Timothy Spall, Andrea Riseborough, Joni Flynn, all delivering as usual. Ah, jaw-dropping performances. Ben's score is yet to be released, so we're going to begin with a needle drop that features in the movie, What Am I Gonna Do This Christmas by Frankie Lane.
What am I gonna do this Christmas without you? What am I gonna do this Christmas alone? Gazing at the mistletoe and longing for your kiss. Why do I have to spend Christmas away from you like this?
This is so lovely because we get such a range of conversations about this beautiful and brilliant film, from, you know, writing the script to the music and how it's fed into it.
Joe, I'm starting with you, because this, don't be scared.
No, it's okay.
But this is where this beautiful story started from, really. Why did you want to write this story, I guess?
I wrote it on a course, and on the course, my amazing mentor, Tammy, encouraged all of us to write our stories from the heart.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to sort of go back in all of my memories and just find what moments of my life really stood out to me emotionally. And the one that I wound up landing on was when my own grandmother passed. I was like 12 or 13?
13
when she passed. So, you know, I was still quite young and I was very much in and out of the hospital, and I wasn't there for all of the big conversations that I knew my family were probably having around me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a part of all of those things. So the story is totally fictional, but it was in kind of like the emotional backdrop for the whole thing was just like, I remembered very vividly being in the room with her and all of my family and realising that all of us had come from this one woman.
Mm.
And in that moment, you know, sending her off in the best way that we could was really the only thing that mattered, above everything, you know, everyone's indifferences or everyone's ego or, you know, whatever. So that's sort of where it came from, I guess, yeah.
What was your response when you read this, first of all? I mean, did you know he was writing it?
I knew he was writing a script.
Yeah.
And he had, actually, I knew that he had talked about it with Mia, my daughter, Joe's sister. I knew that they'd had some conversations, and I was a bit like, why isn't he, I want to, let's do a scene. Because that happens a lot in our house. Do the scene, do that funny scene. No, not that one, do the other one. No, you can't play that part, that's my part. That happens, I'm afraid, a lot. And so when he came to me at the end of the course and he was like, oh, you know, I've written this thing and it's probably rubbish, but you can read it if you want. Actually, can you read it? And if you think it's rubbish, just, you know, just don't tell me if you think. So it was very much like that.
Yeah.
And because Joe had been that COVID generation, along with Ben's son, actually, who missed their GCSEs. Actually, Ben's son and Joe were in the same class.
Wow.
actually, in the same year, since they were 8 years old.
Yeah.
And that generation, they their freedoms were really taken away. And so Joe, even having the courage, honestly, because self-esteem took a battering for that generation too, having the courage to write a short film and apply for that course was something we were so proud of. So I was so overwhelmed that he had even taken that jump and had the strength to do it. And so it didn't surprise me that Joe had shown an interest in screenwriting, because he's always been a really passionate writer and a very good one too.
Yeah.
And that's been a big part of his creativity. But of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that you know, is going to translate into a screenplay. So I read it thinking, oh, well, feeling proud that he wanted to show me his thing. And I read it and I was like, well, you've written a screenplay. And he was like, don't do that thing. That's an annoying thing. And I was like, no, I am going to do that thing. And you're going to go and finish it, because he still had to write the ending. And I said, and then we'll just finish it and then we'll talk about it.
Wow.
And so when we got to that place, I said, no, we're doing it. We are actually doing it. I'm really sorry, but there's nothing you can do about that. So that's what we're doing. And I'll produce it and play one of the sisters. And then when it was really ready, probably after about, I'd say, 10 months to a year of more development, we sent it to Netflix and they were like, yes. We're like, oh, my God. And then all our actors came on board. And then we literally, like, I remember the day I said to Joe, Helen Mirren's just said yes. He was like,
I couldn't believe anything. I still can't. I really can't. It was so insane. I mean, when people started saying yes to actually wanting to, like, be a part of the story that I had written and play the characters that I had put on the page,
it
was just like, I don't know. I was just having, like, existential crisis after existential crisis, really.
Did you have specific people in mind, though, when you were writing for those characters?
At times, yeah.
I made him sit down with me and make a list. I was like, now, come on.
This was after it was written, though.
This was after the first draft was written.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, now you've got to picture the people who might actually play these parts. And when we're sort of writing Helen Mirren, Tim's Ball, Tony Collette, Joe's literally like, none of them are going to say yes. What are you doing? It's like, that's not even a thing.
I was losing my mind even writing the names down.
He's like, oh, come on, mum, this is just ridiculous. Like, this is not, they're not going to say yes. Yeah. And then they all said yes.
Well, of course, because the detail and the way that you've observed relationships and grief and family dynamics, and the detail in that is extraordinary, Joe, in terms of there's so much in there, I think, that audiences are going to be able to relate to, and within different characters. It's not like there's one character you go, oh, yeah, that's me, or I... It's all these different moments across so many of these characters and these relationships that your creativity and your observance of people is quite brilliant in the way you've written this script. It really, really, really is. So, that's why they've said yes, for sure.
Thank you so much for saying thank you.
It really, really is. How was that kind of collaboration, in terms of working on it together, in development?
It was really fun. I mean, it was really, really fun. That's right. It was really fun. And we... as I said, Joe would sometimes come running down the stairs and go, oh, my God, do you think it's OK if I have Bernie steal a wheelchair? And I'm like, put it in!
That was always in there.
I don't know if it was in your first ever... I don't think it was in the first ever draft, was it?
Yeah.
Was
it? Yeah, it was, yeah.
But the Guinness and pork scratchings wasn't.
No, that was later. That was actually Tim said that. Yeah. Tim was like... Because there was a line there that was actually quite like he was trying to apologise for something, and Tim was like, I don't think Bernie would... like apologise now for anything.
Isn't that
lovely? I think he'd say something that was like totally meaningless, and I was like, okay. And then I took a day to like try and come up with something, and then get us some scratchings, and he was like, I remember like I told him the line and he was like,
isn't that amazing though, in terms of your cast are so embedded and invested in the characters that there's that kind of collaboration, there's that freedom for them to kind of communicate to you of things that they don't think are right or that fit, and then give you that, you go away, you write something else. It's that lovely two-way thing
I think perhaps maybe it might have been like helpful over the years. Like, Joe has said himself, even though he'd never tried to write a screenplay, he has grown up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been testing me on my line since he could read. I'm like, somebody please, I've got a 5-pager on Monday, I'm dying. And so understanding...
Well, I'm the only one in the family who isn't dyslexic, so I can actually read the lines back to you.
Yeah, Ned's like, I'll do it. I'm like, please, do you mind, actually? Yeah. So I think partly because of that, and also Joe experiencing me loving collaboration with other actors and directors and writers, and always being able to have that openness of communication, it did mean that Joe positively anticipated that was going to happen. Yeah. And it was really lovely that it did, and that the actors did feel that they could go right to Joe and have those conversations and know that he already had an ability to listen that actually I think is really quite unusual, I have to say.
But then also the same for you in terms of the experience that you've grown up with on set, moving into production and producing, to then take this step finally into directing. You've been picking up tools along the way and really being immersed and listening and watching and being curious about what goes on to finally deliver this beautiful film. How was it?
I never wanted it to finish. I'd say to James, because James...
I know, sorry, James,
the scoring is something that was happening for Ben whilst I was shooting, but some of the temp score very much comes from James as music supervisor making those suggestions, so we have placeholder things so we understand what the emotion needs to be, and also sometimes the timing of a cue, when are you going to start that music playing and when are you going to fade out, and sometimes you do need to play around. And so James and I were very much a part of the kind of second and third stage of putting the film together, so part of the edit, but for sure like all the scoring and everything that comes beyond that. And I would regularly say, I don't want it to finish, don't want it to finish. I honestly loved it so much. And I think the thing I love more than anything was being with all those wonderful people and being able to, to say I handpicked it sounds a bit kind of, I don't know, arrogant or something, but it mattered to me not only to have a 50-50 male-female crew, but to have people who were really kind, because you simply cannot create a safe working environment. And by safe, I mean, like, not just it was a safe space,
you know.
It wasn't a kind of a wing and a prayer. We actually all had to work together to make sure that everyone could do their jobs, but empathetically know when to step away if the actors had a difficult scene, when to lock off the cameras and when they'd be able to just exit the space and leave them totally alone to just roll over again and again and again. And that was the thing that I loved the most of all, I think, was just all being together as a team like that. It's really special when that happens and when you don't have a single bad egg in the box.
Yeah.
We were very lucky.
That's something that I've never really heard anyone talk about before, that idea that you kind of almost like the crew get everything set and then they leave, so that there's it's almost a workshop. It's almost a kind of, you know, why did that help and why was that the right, not for all of it obviously, but for certain scenes you can see why it would be, for particularly those incredibly emotional moments.
I mean, in going into it, I do remember thinking, Helen Mirren said yes, Tim Spall said yes, and I did have a moment of thinking, I'm not going to try anything clever. Like, there's no point. I'm not. There's nothing. I know that there's nothing I could say to them that they won't have heard before.
Yeah.
And nor should I assume to come up with something new, because even I know myself as an actress, if a director like tries something, it feels manipulative. You know, you do find yourself thinking, do you really think no one's actually tried that before? You know. And sometimes the best thing you can possibly do is leave those actors alone. Tim actually really liked a lot of conversation with me, quiet conversation. Helen, the opposite, which I knew was going to be the case. I knew she just would want to be supported to get on with it.
Yeah.
But what I did know that I could offer, because I had such brilliant crew of lovely, lovely people, I did feel confident that I could offer them a slightly altered working environment that would maybe just make them feel differently in those moments. And I have dreamt of acting myself in front of a camera with no one operating it. And I've never had it.
Really?
And no. And so I thought, well, we got to do it. And so I worked very closely with Alvin, our cinematographer, and actually both of our camera operators, Al Ray and Natasha Mullen, brilliant young filmmaker. God, she's so amazing. But we worked really closely in going through the script and earmarking scenes. And there weren't as many as I would have liked, but a good handful.
Yeah.
Earmarking scenes where it would be possible to do that, provided that we didn't have a lighting change, provided that it was just in one room and no one was having to, you know, walk to the sink and come back again. And where we had decided to do it, we were able to. And Helen did say to me, I've never had that.
Wow.
She said, I think maybe I had that once when I made everyone leave the room doing a love scene when I was in my 30s or something like that. But this was a case of not sort of making anyone leave. It was a case of us all saying, this could be one of our locked off ones, couldn't it? And everyone going, I think so. Yeah, let's do it. And always starting with, did the actors want to get up and sit down again? Were they going to be completely static? Always being led by the choices they wanted to make. It was fantastic to be able to give them that opportunity of something different.
Did you write, or were you thinking about music at all when you were writing the script?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was like a couple of songs that were written into the script from the beginning. I mean, Georgia, of course, is like a song in it that actually became a theme then later on in the soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was kind of amazing having that be something that became such a prominent part of the score and of the movie and of the story. And also, like, you know, when I started to hear Ben's music, it's crazy the collaborative journey when you start to just get inspired by every single different department, you know. And the second I started hearing the music, it almost made me feel different things I didn't know were in the story.
Wow.
And made me realize new stuff as well about some of the characters. And I also listened to a lot of music while I was writing the script. I just think music's really inspiring.
Yeah.
I think you can come up with a lot whilst listening to stuff. And also that song at the beginning, which was a nightmare to... The song at the beginning, What Am I Going to Do This Christmas? By... What's his name?
Frankie Lane.
Frankie Lane, yeah.
By Frankie Lane. that song, I literally found it. I was looking for old Christmas songs, trying to see if there was one that related, like, the lyrics related to the story. And I literally was just, like, going through, like, old Christmas songs on YouTube, and I stumbled across this Frankie Lane song called What Am I Gonna Do This Christmas? It was just, like, weirdly perfect, and I'd never heard it before.
Neither had anyone else.
Nope. It was, like, the most obscure Christmas song ever, but also so beautiful, and it was amazing that I actually wrote that into the script and imagined it, you know, being at the beginning of the story, and then it actually, you know, was on screen. It was, like, you know, so, so cool. Yeah.
So James Watkins, music supervisor on it, and Ben, am I right in thinking you were Joe's music teacher?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I love this whole film is about family. Yeah. It's like family in front of the screen and behind the screen. It's so amazing. Talk to me, first of all, about the conversations that you had about coming on to work on the film, and also your reaction to reading Joe's script.
Well, the reaction to reading Joe's script was the cue that happens when in the Dunes montage. That was my reaction, just you know, before a single scene had been shot. And you sent me that script over, and we'd had an initial conversation about, like, so I was doing a composition course, and I'd sent you guys my reel and like some little ideas and things, and wow, that was that conversation where you looked at me in the eye and said, can you do this? And I said, yes, I can. I will never forget that conversation.
It was quite good, though, because we were all a bit terrified together, you know. And actually, when you're making something that has a modest budget, you know, you that is really important. And there was just no way that Joe could be a first-time writer, I could be a first-time director, and we weren't going to offer that opportunity to others. And that started with Ben.
And that story you tell, Joe, about Timothy Spall and the Guinness, and coming up with that moment and thinking this wasn't the right way, and then talking about it, that was our kind of experience for the whole thing, you know. You make something, you offer it in trust, and you know that the person's going to feed back to you, and it might not work, and that's fine, you know. And then you change it, and then you try something else, and you keep on going. And working with James was like that as well, you know. Toing and froing, having ideas, you know. And
how was that collaboration then? Because in terms of, like, you know, you're thrown songs or you're thrown things that are in the script, but then also you've got to come up with some ideas, and then also sort of facilitating all those things that are kind of presented to you.
Yeah, and it's bringing together all those different elements. So there's Georgia, which was an on-camera musical number, and then there was, you know, the music that Joe had written into the script, some of which were more difficult to play than others.
Naming no names.
I was like, you've got expensive taste.
And then, you know, working with Ben and working on how the temp score then steered the edit that then helped with Ben's composition. And then even deciding the lineup of instruments was quite a big decision for us. And I think the minimalistic piano and strings works so well with the kind of ensemble nature of the whole film. So it was just bringing all that together.
Yeah, we all
really
became really obsessed with the solo piano.
We did,
We became so obsessed. And poor Ben was just like, but what is that?
Can I have a harp?
There are other instruments.
Can I have a couple of other things?
Yeah. There was that bad day where I suggested a trumpet, but it was like...
But it's amazing, isn't it, how the choice of instrumentation lends itself to the emotion of a film, the performances, or it doesn't as well. You know, it kind of tells you, doesn't it, the music in a way, immediately.
Yeah, it does. And actually in the edit as well, the other thing that was so much fun, honestly, and this was something I learned, is that at a certain point the story has revealed itself to you so much that then it starts to push you away. So there were moments when I would think to myself, oh, God, I've got to get another 3 minutes out of this scene. How am I going to do it? And I would try it one way and it would just go, and then I would slide something else back in. Okay, so against all odds, just keep that piece, move that one out, removing entire scenes and seeing how that felt. And that, of course, also really impacts on the music. Mm. And every single music cue, my God, it was like, I realised that I became a little bit obsessed.
That's the right way.
But I did become a bit obsessive only because when...
You just knew when it was right.
Yeah.
Well, if it starts, I didn't always know when it was right. but when if the music starts a couple of seconds too early or too late, actually what can happen is that you are then pushing the audience to an emotional place when they just might not be ready. Mm. And in fact, with all of our music cues, I liked to think of them as emotional offerings almost to the audience. And if they were ready to go on that journey with that character or in that particular moment, then great. But to force and trick an audience, I hate false sentiment. Yeah. Mm. And actually music, if it's queued up in the wrong place, you can slide into that false sentimentality that I did everything to try and avoid, because that wasn't ever in the script.
Yeah.
We all actually had to really be collaborative about that stuff. Joe was away working in Atlanta through a large part of the edit, and I would only, like, if I was showing him something where I had cut maybe even a whole scene, I'd think, oh my god, how am I going to tell Joe that I cut that really amazing scene, in which the actors were brilliant. And so I'd make sure that like I had a good solid piece of temp, sometimes a temp version of our master that Ben had literally played into his piano at home and recorded into his iPhone. Yeah, and I'd be like, just send it to me, because I'm going to FaceTime Joe when he's awake in 4 hours. Okay, let's do that. And then, because I always had to try and present the gentlest version of sometimes, you know, quite, not brutal edits, but, you know, tricky decisions.
You've got to make hard choices as a director in that situation, haven't you?
I learnt, and it was, we all kind of had to really work quite closely together in that.
Where did Gregory Porter come into it, and where was that kind of, when did that conversation start and happen?
So it was 2022. And you had just written the first pass. And when I sat down with Joe and said, okay, come on, let's make our list, our wish list. And as we're making this list, and Joe's kind of going, oh, you're insane. He then, in that moment, he says to me, oh my God, imagine if we got like something like Gregory Porter. I mean, that's a stupid idea. Forget I said it, Mum. That's a completely stupid idea.
And we did forget that idea.
We did forget. And Joe had just seen Gregory perform at Love Supreme. And that was why it was very present in his mind. And then we just started playing Greg's music over and over a lot. And so Joe had mentioned this thing of what we should ask Greg. Completely forgot about it. And then, I mean, I feel like it's also just happened. It's really weird because we only just delivered the film on the 14th of October. But it must have been sometime in late August, I think. And I suddenly thought, fuck it, I'm just going to write a letter to Gregory Porter. And so I phoned James and I said, What do you think?
Do you have his email?
I mean, we had none of
He said, is this a crazy idea? I said, well, let's try it.
Actually, what you said is, oh my God, I've just got goosebumps.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, I'm just going to... James said, I'll try and track it down. Like, he's probably got some huge management company or something. And I was like, great, I'm just going to sit here now. And I wrote a very long, probably too long, massively impassioned, probably too impassioned, email just telling him about the story, how Joe had written it, and how meaningful his music has been to us as a family, but also to me as an actress. I've used it, you know, just when preparing for a role and things like that. Wrote this email. James comes back to me, he's like, you're not going to believe this. He's just got a manager, and that guy only represents about four people. This is easy. Here's the email. I'm like, oh my God. So I sent it to James, and I was just, send it. And within 24 hours.
Yep. Straight away.
We got a note saying, when can I see the film? I'd love...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We...
Yeah, it was crazy.
I messaged Joe.
I didn't know what to do at all. I was like, so...
Joe woke up to screenshots of messages from James saying, oh, my God, Greg wants to see the movie. And Joe's going, phones me, and he's like, wait, what?
Fast forward a few weeks, and he just appeared at Abbey Road when these guys were...
Yeah, we were recording the score, the whole string orchestra and everything, and then Gregory turns up and he's like...
Just came and hung out. He was like, hey, I'm in London. Shall I come and see you guys? I'm like, sure. And so then I'm turning around to the whole room where we're scoring, and, you know, Ben is like, how is this even real? And then Greg walks into the room, and we were all a bit like, he's in the room. It was like Superman had just landed, honestly, and wrapped his huge cape around all of us.
Yeah,
and it was
amazing.
And
amazing,
the fact that we were even at Abbey Road was bonkers. Yeah. But we had just so squirreled away a piece of the budget because we actually just wanted Ben to have that experience.
But that moment, Gregory Porter came along, and I remember him looking at me in the eyes and saying, "I've just got to learn your language, Ben." I was like,
but that's amazing, the fact that he was interested in what he wanted to create to fit in with that, as well as being inspired by the film. That's amazing.
Yeah, he totally took the sound world on and sort of. Yeah, I mean that's the really song. The song doesn't sound like it separates.
He was like super, super collaborative and really into the whole.
And we were in the room when he actually recorded the song, and we were all a bit of a mess. In fact, Joe and I were such a mess that he stopped relying on us for constructive criticism because we were just crying, and he was like, "You're the no bullshit dude."
Yeah.
I guess he'd kind of given up on Joe, and we're just like, "It's just really good. Yeah. Can you do it again?" It's ridiculous.
What a beautiful full circle.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Lucky. Yeah.
Well, listen, I hope this is the first of many. Now we've got the firsts out the way. Oh, yeah. It's like what's the second? Huge congratulations. It's really special. Thank you for your time. Cheers.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process. From syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns, automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101 night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Oh, we'd have loved to have played you a little clip of Gregory's song for the movie, but it hasn't been released yet. But I'm sure it won't be long before it's in the public domain. And when it is, we will let you know. My huge thanks to Kate, to Joe, Ben and James for taking the time to talk to us, to all the team behind the scenes as well for facilitating that. Goodbye June is in select cinemas as of Friday the 12th of December before streaming on Netflix on Christmas Eve. I'm not going to lie, this is a very emotional film, but it's also an incredibly fulfilling film as well. Really kind of makes you kind of grateful and think and reflect upon your own situation, both on the people that you have around you and also the people that you might have lost. I highly recommend checking it out. Next up, director Alex Russell and Archie Madekwe, who you might recognise from Saltburn or Gran Turismo. They join me to discuss their new film Lurker that's coming out in cinemas on December the 12th. It's a really fascinating little film. Archie plays a pop star who befriends a fan, and it takes us into a really interesting journey of kind of fandom, obsession, and the music industry,
the lines and the boundaries that are crossed and shouldn't be crossed. And there's some great music in this as well. Original songs written for Archie to perform. So join me next time, Alex Russell, Archie Madekwe, talking Lurker. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.